Welcome to The Stretch. I'm Dr. John Mark Harrison, lead pastor at First Baptist Concord in Knoxville, Tennessee. In this leadership podcast, I have conversations about growing as a leader and living an inspiring life. When we stretch, we grow. So let's grow. Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. We're with Parker Manuel. Parker is church planner at Pinewood Church in Boulder, Colorado, huh?
That's right.
That's awesome, man. Well, thanks for being with us today, dude. Long drive.
Thanks for having me. Yeah. Thanks for having me. I'm really grateful to be here.
Yeah, exactly. You were out seeing family in North Carolina.
Yep.
All right. And got to spend some time Ocean Isle. The waves are good there, aren't they?
Yeah, they actually were. They were really good.
Yeah, man. I don't know what it is about that beach, but it feels like the waves are always good there.
So. Yeah, it was beautiful.
That's cool.
Not a lot of people, which is also nice.
Yeah, that is great. That is great. Able to social distance.
Yeah.
Now, how does that go with five kids?
We do not social distance.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. We pretty much get hung on 24/7.
That's funny. That's
Which is fine.
Now, you know Trevor, who's on our staff team.
Love Trevor, yes.
Yeah. And you got anything you want to share about Trevor?
There's nothing to share. He's pretty much a solid dude all the time.
Yeah, so we should trust him and believe
him. We could trust Trevor. Yeah.
You're the first person that's ever told me.
Hey, I'm not saying I don't have stories, but I mean, we're on air, honors our culture. So yeah, he's a phenomenal pastor.
That's great, man. That's awesome, dude. Well, man, thanks for taking this time. For real. Really appreciate
it. Really,
why don't you just tell us a little bit about your walk with the Lord? And I know you grew up in the Greensboro area, but now you're in Colorado. So what happened to get you from home to there? And just talk to us about those things.
I'd love to tell you a little bit about my story. Came to faith really young. Me and my wife came to faith really, really young. She was four.
Wow.
I was seven. And a little after we came to faith, we felt God calling us into ministry. You don't hear this story often where someone really young gets called into ministry also as a child as well. But we both knew that God was calling us into pastoral ministry and mission work, specifically towards either unreached people groups or hard to reach places.
Yeah.
And so that was pretty much the trajectory of our life since we were kids. We saw our parents serve in ministry. Yeah. My wife's family, he was a worship leader. My parents led music as well and led students. And so I guess maybe we had witnessed it at the first generation. And so we were just kind of raised in that. And so, you know, kind of fast forward, we both went to Bible school, and out of Bible school, we both became entrepreneurs and started businesses. She started, I think she started four businesses. I started one. She is a much harder worker and much more creative and more brilliant than I am in every way. And so out of Bible school, you know, you would think that you would go into a ministry position. Well, we actually started businesses and became entrepreneurs and then came together after college and got married. And it was probably a year into our marriage that we got a little bit more bandwidth because our businesses were going really well.
Yep.
And we started traveling to unreached and unengaged people groups in North Africa and spending extended periods of time over there trying to target a place where no one else could go. We just said, we showed up and we said, give us the hardest to reach place. We want to go there and see if we can find a person of peace.
Yeah.
And that was really the start of our ministry together.
Yeah.
And from that point on, I got asked at the church that I was serving in to come on staff as the missions pastor. And I served as the missions pastor for about 5 years before they launched me to plant a church in Boulder. Okay. And it felt like in that moment, moving from Hendersonville, Tennessee, which you're right. I mean, North Carolina is my upbringing. Nashville, Tennessee is where I spent the majority of my ministry life, about 10 years. And being sent to Boulder, Colorado is quite different.
Yeah.
And so it was substantially different in every way. Culture, even the environment from church environment was different out there. And so a lot of learning that happened in the beginning there. But it felt like God was aligning our entire history for that one moment. You know, we had a background in rock climbing, in endurance sports, and a lot of things which fit the culture we were in really well. But then we had the entrepreneur side, which was a history of starting things up, which, as you know, in Boulder, that's a thing.
Startups are
a thing.
Right.
Almost every business is a startup.
It's a startup.
And so a church is a startup.
Right.
And all of those same principles that you have in a startup and in business. And a lot of people don't like to think about church planting as a business startup, but you need those skills in your toolbox in order to start, especially in a town like Boulder.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly feel like it was that history, and God knew that, God had ordained that, that history of ours, both in mission and in entrepreneurial leadership, coming together in Boulder gave us a lot of credibility with the community. So that's a little bit of my
man. That's good.
Kind of,
you know, I think Parker, there, I can think of people in our church right now that are struggling in a call to ministry, and they feel like they've almost missed the opportunity because they've started a business or they've kind of started down a different career. So I didn't know that about you. So talk a little bit more about, like, I mean, God really is using the business skill that He gave you in starting this church in Boulder, isn't He?
Absolutely. I would say that if somebody has the ability, or let's just say they have a calling towards church planting, I would say their first step would be to try to start a business.
Yeah.
And see how that goes. Start, find a passion or something that they're skilled in or something that they love and start there, because the reality is the idea of a church planter moving into a city and that being his sole job indefinitely, I think that's going to be a thing of the past. I think the future is church planters moving into cities with skills, with an entrepreneur spirit, and starting businesses and starting a church at the same time.
I love that because, you know, we've had this model for so long of we'll wait till we have the funding and then we'll go.
Sure.
And we're not gaining any ground.
Not at all.
In the mission endeavor, you know.
Not at all.
We're losing ground because of the resources. And so I agree with you, and I love that in you of, man, if God's given you a skill, use it for His glory, and at the same time, start a church.
Start a church. Don't overthink it. I was thinking about the reality, and, you know, I hate to stereotype, but I think if you look back at the stereotypes of church planters that either start a church bivocational or even have that vision, then in the church planting, and maybe it was just in the circles that I was running in, it's almost that mentality of, well, he wasn't good enough to raise the money, or maybe he doesn't feel confident enough to be in his pastoral leadership to just do that one thing. When in reality, I think it's the exact opposite.
Yeah.
I think that, in the future, it's going to be viewed as, if you only start a church as a pastor, it's going to be viewed as, is that the only thing that you're good at?
I
think the future is definitely going to be hone in on some skills and talents,
and
while at the same time using them to advance the mission. And really, we're talking about church planting, but really using that in whatever sphere of influence you have. So it could be your neighborhood,
right?
Starting a small group. It could be in your own city, starting another church planting campus,
right? Exactly. Man, that's a good word. So let's talk about Colorado, you know, Boulder specifically. Tell us about your city. Tell us what you're learning. Tell me about, you know, I mean, most of these folks in Boulder did not grow up in church.
Absolutely not.
So what are you doing to connect with folks who have zero interest in church?
Well, that's a really great question. You know, the West specifically, kind of the Northwest and those parts are still considered pre-Christian. And if you consider some of the greatest movements in history have been in pre-Christian context. And so you see a lot of pre-Christian opportunities in cities like Boulder and all of the major cities out west. But what are we doing to reach? I would say our mission statement at Pinewood is to meet people where they are and point them to Jesus. Mm. And I would say that that would be a good value to put in people's lives and in their hearts.
Yeah.
For everyday living and living on mission.
Yeah.
In Boulder, we never really wanted to come in and change the city, change what they love, change. Our goal and our mission was really to come in and serve this city and point them to Jesus. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a perspective shift that if people were to think, even with their neighborhood or maybe their spheres of influence, I'm not necessarily looking to change my friend. I'm looking for God to change them. So my responsibility is just to meet them wherever they are. Mm-hmm. And it really shifts because what that does is it doesn't make you choose who you're going to love and how you're going to love them.
Yeah.
It makes you just find out at the deepest longing and point. So whatever passion they have, whatever hobby they have, whatever their deepest struggle is, I'm going to meet them there. And then as I meet them there, I'm going to take every opportunity that I can to point them to Jesus. And I think that's been a big win for us. So whenever we came into Boulder, we immediately dove into what the people loved. Mm. We knew that the people love the outdoors, so we dove into the outdoors. Where they love climbing, we dove into climbing. And, I mean, to bring that a little bit back home, for here is finding the people around you and the hobbies that they already have and joining in on their hobbies.
Right.
You imagine, I mean, if you go to play golf with somebody in your neighborhood who already loves golf, you're going to be out there 4 hours. I would imagine you get at least one opportunity to talk about Jesus.
Right. Exactly. You know, we overcomplicate it so much, don't
100%.
We? 100%. You know, it really is. Get involved in folks' lives. Be a genuine friend. you know, build relationships, share Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we're really good about, you know, becoming somebody's friend. And this is something that I think I talk a lot about in our church is it taking that first step. I think we're comfortable with. I think it really is a challenge for people to know how to take that next step in introducing them to Jesus by saying, you know, what do you believe about God?
Right.
And I think we have it in our minds that if we don't go through the entire gospel presentation and go to a point of conversion, then we're not necessarily being the evangelist we're called to be. When in reality, I think if we just start a conversation, I think people want to go further.
Yeah.
And that's what I've noticed. So we've been blessed to see a lot of people say yes to Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Our babysitter said yes to Jesus, which is a miracle.
Yeah.
We were around her a lot and we brought her into church and she inquired about the gospel and my wife shared the gospel. She came to faith. We've had our neighbors say yes to Jesus. And I mean, even just in the last 3 months during COVID, we've seen 28 salvations.
Wow.
And we've just seen God move. And I think the result of that is just leaning in and starting those conversations to say, what do you believe about God? Mm-hmm. What do you believe about his church? What would you say is a barrier between you either not following Jesus or following Jesus? And I think if you come up with maybe just a couple of these questions and start to have those conversations, you'll realize that people are more desperate for it than you think.
Yeah. Just a question. Does offering to pray for people who don't come from a Christian background at all, is that a way that you find people are open to kind of cracking the door to spiritual conversations?
I think that's a phenomenal way. Yeah. We use that method.
Yeah. 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 How can I pray for you? Or just once you have that friendship, it's easy to offer to pray for folks and encourage folks.
It's actually a part of our, so we teach our people four questions. We call it Connect Four. You know, game?
The game,
We call it Connect Four. So we like to tell people, if you want to make a quality connection, use Connect Four. And the questions are, what's your name?
Yeah.
This is, so we start something obvious.
Yeah.
Where are you from?
Mm-hmm.
Because in out west, especially in major cities, nobody's from there.
Got it.
So it's a good leading question to try to make that connection.
Yeah.
And then what's your story?
Yeah.
Which kind of pulls more out of them so that you can make the connection. And then how can I pray for you?
Yeah.
And we say, man, if you can complete all four of those questions in one interaction, it's a quality connection. And that how can I pray for you is that opportunity that you can point them to Jesus.
That's it, man. That's really good, bro. That's really good. That's helpful. So your church in Boulder, it's made up of a lot of young adults.
Yes.
Like you guys are reaching
predominantly
young adults. You know, a church like Concord, we have, you know, four generations in our church, a lot of four generation families. And frankly, you know, as our church is kind of established, been here over 100 years, it's always a challenge in churches like ours to continue to reach young adults. And that's something we've really made a priority in trying to, all right, what can we do to make certain we pass on this legacy of faith? You know, we've got an incredible heritage of faith in our church. And what we really want to do is stand on the shoulders of the faithful generations before us and continue just to advance the gospel to every generation. And so one of the things we realized, we got to figure out a little better on is like, how do I reach somebody that's 27, 29, 31, you know, that maybe does not have that, what's the right word? It's like when you're over 35, you feel like you're supposed to be in church on Sundays.
For sure.
But for some reason, when there's a generational shift there and it's not as much a reality of like, hey man, there's not that draw on Sunday to be a part of the body of Christ.
And it's true.
And there's so many distractions, there's so much busyness with kids and ball and travel and the lake and the beach and everything else in between and family, you know?
I know.
So what are some of the things you guys are doing? What does it look like to be a leader that folks in their 20s want to be a part of what you're doing?
I think that's one of the most important questions you could ask, especially with the amount of influence that demographic has in our country as a whole.
Right.
I mean, if you think about the ages of 20, let's just say 23 or 24, kind of post-college ages to 35, they have a significant amount of influence. Mm. You know, say 40 plus has the money, but 40 under has the influence. They're the ones that are making the decisions, not only for our generation, but for the future generation.
Right.
And something that we've been challenged, me personally, going into Boulder, I knew that the demographic was younger. The average age is 28 years old. And so I knew that if I was going to make an impact in the city, that was going to have to be my target.
Yeah.
And an intentional decision that I made before even moving there was I'm going to put people in that age demographic in leadership to help make the decisions so that we can reach the college students.
Right.
Because if you think about how generations best learn, I would imagine that a 60-year-old isn't going to best learn from a 16-year-old. Right. I would imagine that a 60-year-old is probably going to best learn from like a 45-year-old, somebody who can maybe understand him a little more. But a 45-year-old is going to probably best learn from like a 28-year-old. I mean, so what you see is you're going to learn from the person that's kind of right under you.
Yeah.
And I would imagine in a four generation that to make it like a practice to learn from the generation that is below you.
Mm.
And that was my goal. I mean, I'm 34, and I already feel like I have no idea what's cool.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I hang around Trevor.
Right.
Trevor tells me.
He tells you what's cool.
Yeah, he's like, you know, that looks bad. You know, you need to change your shirt. You know?
Right, exactly.
And so I knew that I needed to put people in the mid-20s around me speaking into the ministry. And so I ask them all the time, you know, from the worship experience to the way we do outreach to the things they care about, I say, is this something that would attract your friends?
Yeah.
Because if this is not something that your friends would want to be involved with, we're doing it wrong.
Mm.
And we need to change our strategy, our methods, because the reality is, like, I'm not afraid of changing any method. I'm not afraid of changing the atmosphere in any way, even down to song choice. If it means that we're going to reach the next generation and they're going to reach the next generation.
Yeah.
That's what I'm most concerned about, because in 10 years, I plan on being in this thing for the long haul. And so if I'm looking at investing in something now, if I can invest in 25-year-olds now, then when they're my age in 10 years, and that was built into the culture from the beginning, then my hope is that they're going to be investing in people younger than them. I already had three of my leaders come to me just in the last couple months and say, I have people in their low 20s asking for mentorship from me. And one even came to another couple that we've been mentoring, and they said they wanted us to do some premarital counseling for us.
Yeah.
And I said, man, that's what it's all about.
Right. Right.
Is the generational investment.
Yeah. Man, that's super helpful. Like every generation... And reach back and invest in and learn from.
Learn from, yes. Yeah. Listen.
Yeah, exactly.
And not be afraid.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of fear in that, isn't it? I know, I feel it. Like
I feel it.
You know, at 39, I'm going like, I don't even know what that sentence was that just came out of his mouth. Like, you know, I get text messages sometimes and I screenshot them. I send them to Trevor and I'm like, what did he say? Like, I don't even understand the words he's using.
Same.
You know? And so, you know, it's just, it happens so fast.
Yeah.
You know? I was... injured this week. I was playing a old man game and turned my ankle like an old man.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
It's not hard to do.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, wow, like this is happening, you know? And so I'm just how do you really stay connected? That's a good word. Like relationship, listen, invest in, and encourage, call up, call out. Yeah.
And I like the, and I think there's a beauty in this statement. I think it's Oswald Sanders says, don't be afraid of new ideas, but don't get carried away with them either. And so I think as a future generation, whenever you are listening to the next generation, you're hearing their ideas, don't be afraid of them, but don't get carried away with them either. So maybe you don't go that far, but maybe there's somewhere that you meet in the middle that still works for being able to bring them in, which, I mean, if I went with every idea that tell me, it would be, I don't know that it would necessarily be wise, but we try to meet in the middle.
That's good, man. You know, I told you a little bit of just, you know, and you even spoke to it too, you know, like I really want, you know, to be the kind of leader here at Concord that can pass down the faith to new generations.
Absolutely.
You know, such a legacy. I'd hate for that legacy to not continue.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really what I'm working for professionally, I guess you could say, as the pastor of the church. And personally, I've got some goals with my kids and some different things. They're like, man, this is really where I want to leave my mark. What would you say, like for you, like, what do you want your legacy to be? What are those things that, man, you're pursuing after each and every day?
That's a great question. There's a passage that I've been thinking about in Psalms 90, Psalms chapter 90 and verse 12. It says, and it's a familiar passage in Psalms. It says, Lord, teach me to realize the brevity of life so that I may gain a heart of wisdom. And some other translations may say, teach me to carefully count my days.
Yeah.
And so thinking about leaving a legacy, and we've experienced loss recently in my family. And so just thinking about the idea of a legacy, I think that's been at the forefront of my mind over the last little bit is you had Moses looking back, seeing that the people had just squandered their life and and maybe what he would have considered wasted living. And I don't want to live. I don't want to live a life, and I don't want to live a minute where I feel like I wasted a moment, wasted a season. Yeah. Whether it be even like this, that's why even in this season, I think that idea of legacy is even heightened for me, which is maybe caused me to maybe work a little too much. But I just feel like, especially even in this season, like I don't want to waste or squander a moment. Teach me the help me to realize the brevity of life, so that I may gain a heart of wisdom. So I've been praying a lot for wisdom in this season to know what the legacy looks like and the faithfulness looks like. And so for me, if I was to say that I want to leave a legacy and put it all in one word, I would say that the word would be faithfulness.
Yeah.
And there's a cheesy song, which is okay, because it's okay to love old cheesy songs.
That's right.
It's by Steve Green, so you know it's good.
That's right.
And he says, oh, may all who come behind us find us faithful, and may the power of our devotion light their way, and may the footsteps that we lead them to believe, and the lives that we live inspire them to obey. And that would be my legacy that I hope to leave. I think that translates for my church. It translates for my wife, for my kids, is that if I can leave a faithful life, in which faithfulness is funny because faithfulness is not seasonal.
Yeah.
Faithfulness is... Yeah. Consistent. Mm-hmm. And so if in all seasons, and so if I can be faithful to follow Jesus, faithful to be obedient to what he's called me to in every single day, faithful to be true to my convictions, even when nobody is looking, and have genuine integrity those seasons, that's my heart, that's my goal. And I would say that would be the legacy that I would want to leave is faithfulness to God.
Amen, brother.
His calling on my life.
Yeah. Well, we'll pray that with you and for you. But man, thank you for your faithfulness thus far. And thank you for, man, starting this work there at Pinewood Church. And we'll be praying for you in Boulder. I know it's, man, such a challenging time, but pray that the Lord will continue to bless you. And pray for you and your family with five kids, man. Come on.
It's good.
That's gonna be a lot of fun.
We do have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's chaos, but we try to enjoy the journey a little
bit. Exactly right. I mean, y'all can almost go 3-on-3 in the driveway. Almost. Yeah, you get out there with them, you're in, right? Yeah, exactly. Almost. That's great. Well, man, thanks for your time today.
Of course. Blessings. Thanks for having me.
We'll see you soon.